Dai, we are starting with the assigned sutta, Tuataka Sutta. Before going to the sutta, if anyone is having commenting or individual interview reports or something like that to start, we will take few minutes. And if there is no, and if they are over, then we are going to go to the book.
අසරයි ස්වාමීන් වහන්ස
සාදු සාදු අනුමෝදාමි අනුමෝදිතබ්බං කමාමි කමිතබ්බං සුවපත්වෙත්වා හොඳයි කියන්ද
Swami Nahansa, we have received two reports for today's session.
Yeah.
With your permission, I would like to present.
Yes, please.
One I have received as audio from Dinuka Decades. I will play the audio, Swami Nahansa.
Today, I did walking meditation for 1 hour. When I started my meditation, I was quite distracted. Because I had just been in bed reading like a book, and so my mind was quite distracted when I started. However, after a while, I found it easier to look at my feet as I wasn't getting distracted by thoughts as much. When this happened, I noticed that my feet would often go off the ends of the mat rather than the sides of the mat like they normally do. I also noticed that my feet would, when I would put them down, they would run across the floor for a little while I was walking. I tried to do a three-part turn at the end of the mat, but sometimes I forgot and just spun around really quickly. I also noticed that I knew that my feet were cold because when they were off of the mat, they felt cool. But when they touched the floor, they felt warmer because they were absorbing the heat from the mat. Another thing I noticed was that even though I got more tired near the end of my meditation, I felt much, much calmer, and the calmer I was, I found it more easy to walk. I also noticed that the little bumps on the mat were bigger in certain places compared to other places. And when I would step on them, they would sometimes like push further to my foot, and that's how I knew that there were bigger bumps. There were pieces of the mat that had fallen off at the end of the mat. And sometimes when I went off the end of the mat, it caught them with my foot. And I found this annoying because it would make me trip over almost sometimes. Thank you for listening, Venerable Bhante. Tarawan Saranai.
End of the report, Pante.
Yeah, sounds are fairly faded off, but anyway, it was about walking meditation and how much legs are disciplined to walk along the mat or sometimes going off and not controlling. But anyway, as and when it happens, some coldness and differences are felt, and therefore there's a kind of enthusiasm, kind of a grasping nature is there. So that means a prepared mind is there. That means mind is ready. But the way of presentation, you have to speak little louder. You have to speak directly to the mic, and it would have been direct communication. But anyway, young people doing meditation and reporting in this way is kind of an encouraging thing. So therefore, try to incorporate at least something on walking sitting meditation also, because even if you are starting with the perplexed mind, at the end it appeared to be somewhat calmer, and you are going to gain. You are gaining the results of calm mind by directly going into the walking meditation, sitting meditation. So you have to balance them. Some people are happy with walking, some people are happy with sitting. But theoretically, they both must be balancing. So therefore, this is good. And there may be some other monks in the audience today also wish to add some comments. And my humble request is, please give some sitting meditation details also, so that report would have been much balanced. Yes, from America.
Excuse me, Swaminanda. I just noticed that you were aware of your distracted mind in the beginning, and you could relate it to, you were relating that to having been reading prior to sitting, so that your mind was still active and thinking a lot, possibly, and so you were distracted. And then at the end of meditation, you were you found you had calmness of mind. Your mind was calmer. And I noticed that you had said that the last time you gave a report as well, that you found that your mind was calm at the end of walking. So that's a seems a good sign that you're getting some benefit, you're feeling some benefits from meditation, from your walking meditation, and that you feel I feel like you, I can tell you are very sort of interested in meditation, and you see how it can help in your life, bringing you more mindfulness in daily activities. And I feel like you're probably making those connections too, how mindfulness can be good for just throughout the day, coming back to the present moment without even realizing it. Maybe you are starting to become more mindful throughout the day. So I hope that is happening for you. And I just appreciate your, I feel like you have, I feel there's an enthusiasm that you have that you're bringing to this, and an interest in meditation. And I thought it was also good that you noticed that you were feeling agitated by the mat was tripping you or something, and you felt some agitation. So that I liked that you became aware of that and actually noticed what that was, the agitation. And I think that's a good sign too, that you're aware of your emotions and can label them, and then once you label them, the emotion can then be just like anything else we know, it can go away. But sometimes it may not, but at least you know a way to work with your emotions as well, which is very helpful in life. So that's my few responses. I appreciate this opportunity, Swaminathan.
I really appreciate that. American is now giving views. Earlier expecting all the time how to present the interview reports. Now you are happy to give comments. So that is the way we have to share. Each of us become teachers as well as students.
Thank you, Swaminathan.
Much appreciated.
I learned so much from Swaminathan about all this. So I bow to him, to Mahatero. Thank you.
Respect to Lokaswami Nyansi and the Venerable Monks. The report started stating that there is a scattered mind and then ended up with a calm mind. And in between, you have mentioned a lot of observations that you have made physically as well as mentally. So at the end of the session, just see whether you appreciate that you were able to see all these things and be aware of all these things because of mindfulness. And when each of these things are happening, just learn to appreciate the fact that you are mindful. That way you will be able to do this as a game, as a hobby. So build up that pleasant mind when you practice.
Good. So when young people are meditating and giving reports, we all folk very, very happy, whatever may be, because you are sharing with. So if there are no comments, we will go for the second report, please.
Yes, Swaminathan, sir. Most respected Bhante, for about 6.5 years, under your guidance, the primary object has been rising, falling. Now, over several months, the attention more often went to inside the nostrils as rising, falling became less and less prominent. Now, often, the abdomen feels far away and the body is not felt physically, just a buzzing mass of vibrations, energy, with no clear boundary, and the abdomen therefore also not clear felt. So now I have the sensation of the air flow at the nostrils as primary object and not rising and falling anymore. Is that okay? Now, having the primary object change to the nostrils, sometimes sitting unfolds just as before with rising, falling. This is, I observe, that rises and ceases, while awareness of breathing remains as an anchor. Other times, the primary object disappears, but for a while, there still is a slight sense of breathing happening somehow. Mainly, I feel a vibrating body. Focus goes to this non-physical body and became more and more one with it. These things are very relaxing and reduce tension a lot, which supports mindfulness, clarity and calm in everyday situations. I don't decide how a sitting happens. It just unfolds one way or the other. Please, can you comment, respected Bhante? Thank you. Therwan Saranai. End of the report, Swaminathan.
So this is the observing object. With boundaries and without boundaries, it's a completely relaxation method and quite scientific and quite under your very nose. But the thing is, without boundaries, you can't explain because language is lost. With boundaries, language is clear, crispy reporting, the beginning, the middle and the end is clear. But the end of it is no boundaries, no language, no communication, but we are still trying. That's a very remarkable feature in humans. We can just explain in-breath and out-breath without boundaries. in-breath, anything, just like a slurry, just like a fruit salad, just like a salad. Everything is mixed up. So these things appear like unexplainable, undisentanglable. But the Buddha says there are four aspects for that. So we were just discussing about that in the single medium discussion. I am with the book Venerable Jnananda, Katukurundi Venerable Jnananda, The Magic of the Mind, page number 30. This no boundary situation happened with respect to the mode, with respect to the characteristics, with respect to the signs, and with respect to the exponents. Linga, Nimiti, Akara, Uddesha. It's well explained in Mahanidana Sutta, and it is also been quoted in the book. In Sinhala also it has been translated by the same author, so therefore they are very authentic. And these are the things we often debate, we often argue against, different modes of our what we are talking about, different characteristics of what we are talking about, different signs we attribute to them, what we are talking about, and exponents, the attributed names. So they are really messy. When there are no boundaries, this missing or miscommunication stops. But many people think no mindfulness, no language, no linear relationship and no linear progress. So therefore they give up the meditation. What happens is you lose the boundary of yourself. So they are losing the boundary of the language, losing the boundary of mode, characteristics, sign and the exponents. Linga, Nimiti, Uddesha, Akara. So how can we discuss about this evolution? It is happening within few minutes. That's the point where we lost in our arguments, and therefore first and foremost you have to sort it out within yourself. Then only we can try our at the best, talk with equal people, have the same meditation experiences, then it is possible. Otherwise it's impossible. Because we don't know, we are talking about the modes or characteristics or signs or the exponents. So you have to define it. But even then, soon they all will dissolve. We are going to the same vibration, same basi, we call flux. In Sinhala we call goje. The Buddha says it is santati. So that is the part where the science lost, technology lost, language lost, grammar lost, politics lost, economic lost, society lost, but some kind of a communication is continuing. So that is the part we call Arya Vohara, that's the part we call the noble dialogue. So it's highly depending on the trust. You're also talking about the same thing, I'm also talking about the same thing. We are not limited to the mode, limited to the characteristic, not limited to the sign, not limited to the exponents. Akar, that because both these names are completely different. He is giving four names, different names. When Jnanaponi, Jnanamoli is giving different names. Achan Jeff is giving different names. So therefore we are utterly lost in commentaries. We are utterly lost in language. But still anyway, we are in a discussion. So therefore, please try to understand the meditation and meditative object with boundaries and without boundaries. That only thing I try my best but fail to understand is without boundaries is more advanced than with boundaries. With boundaries is Montessori classes. Without boundaries is advanced level or high education. So therefore, as far as you are within the boundaries, you can communicate, formal, lenient. So start with that and explain how they are losing the boundaries, losing the modes, losing the characteristic, losing the signs, and losing the exponents. That means you are losing yourself. So this is a very fairly good presentation, but I would like to give this inferential knowledge, that deductive knowledge. Please read Venerable Jnanananda's Magic of the Mind. I was in the page number 28, 29 and 30, but I recommend the whole book. It is about this disentanglement of the language crux. Thank you. Any other comments from the audience?
Swami Nansa, is it the thing called universal communication?
Let's speak louder.
Is it called the universal communication or secret communication of the universe?
You can say by that you are attributing another name. Then you get caught up. Don't try to limit into a name. Don't try to pachakotanne yanne pa. Put the tattoos on that. This is what? Many people say it's many names. They are not mystics. It is a scientific one. Many people attribute to the mystics. They call universal language or healing power or cosmic energy or Brahma. All the kind of things. The Buddha says, no. They are law of the nature. So by giving names, you are reducing into a basket. I mean, it's okay. As far as we know, we are reducing it. But try to keep it open without belongs to any domain. That belongs to any person's private property. And then we all are human the same. And whether you realize it or not, you are in it. But many people not happy to understand we are in it, such a liberation. We don't know, we never expect that we are such a purified beings because we are always try to attribute to the language so much so you become Montessori. Use the language with their limited usage. But don't get bounded with that. Don't argue with the people because they meant something, express something through arguments. You try to understand what he is trying to express. That you can do by emotional intelligence. You can do by empathy. What he is trying to do. Then that is exactly the thing you are also trying to say. Language is such a barrier. Okay. Daily I am fighting with Venerable Buddha Rakhir. At least 1 hour. Fighting. And after, before going, he says, Bhante, thank you very much for listening. We are vehemently fighting. Sometimes I am standing, he is sitting. Sometimes I am sitting and he is standing. Fighting. We are not merciless. That with that only we are going to go to the bed. He has to climb the mountain. I just directly, to chase him away, I close my door and I say, I am tata, bye-bye, I am sleeping. So much so in a dialogue, it's a dynamic dialogue. Okay, now we have taken almost half an hour, so I would like to invite Venerable Buddha Rakhita. Dhamma Rakhita also here, I always confuse these two names, to start with the point where we stopped last time. Yes, sir.
So this is from the 14th Sutta in the chapter of Octaves. From the Sutta Nipata, Bhikkhu Bodhi translates this in English as quickly, Tuvataka Sutta.
Tuvataka Sutta. Tuvataka.
Tuvataka. A bhikkhu should not be shaken by blame, nor should he be elated when praised. He should dispel greed and miserliness, as well as ego and slanderous speech. So many times in the suttas it's mentioned to avoid the winds of things like blame and fame, greed and miserliness, these opposite qualities. However, underlining this is that these are emotional states and they reflect a pull or a push we experience in life. We experience attraction or rejection by whatever object is arising in our mind, and we have these strong emotional states that are associated with this experience of attraction or repulsion. So it's not about that. It's not just simply as Bhante has just mentioned, at the Montessori level, we have rules, we have vinaya, we have social constraint. We have other ways and means of trying to not be blown around. But at the end of the day, we have to make peace with the world. So while he talks about, in this phrase, he talks about not being shaken by blame, not elated by praise. This is another way of saying that he is at peace with the world. So when the bhikkhu is being blamed, he's at peace. These words, the blaming words, he doesn't take them into his heart in such a way that he is disturbing himself and disturbing his peace. When he's been praised, he's not taking those words into his heart and being blown around by that praise. Similarly, he's not attracted in such a way that he has greed, and he's not, on the other hand, miserliness. He has an ability to enjoy wealth. He's not miserly. He has an ability to be generous. He knows that how to distinguish what is enough, that he has enough, and therefore he can share what he has more than enough of, and he's not miserly. So it's not just simply that this is a set of rules, or like a vinaya or a discipline for the monks to learn. Maybe initially it's like that at a Montessori level, but as the person grows in wisdom and in inner peace and in talent and skill to deal with the vicissitudes of the world, then it's just a natural manifestation that he is not shaken by blame, he is not elated by praise, because he doesn't externalize his view of self. He looks into his own inner qualities of peacefulness and calm, and he doesn't externalize his mind into anchors outside of his mind. So whether somebody is blaming him or praising him, he doesn't mind about that, because it's not important what somebody else has to say about him. I mean, of course, if one is, you know, in dialogue and there's a back and a forth, okay, there's a listening quality, but at the same time, there's not this internalizing of it, so that it becomes like that. We're not anchored to it, so that we're not taking that blame into our heart, we're not taking that praise into our heart. And similarly around greed and miserliness, there's a lot of evaluation in these words, like you evaluate yourself against somebody else. And in the case of greed, we feel not enough. In miserliness, we feel not enough. We're not able to, in greed, we want more, and in miserliness, we can't be generous with what we have. So we're not angered, and we're not slandered by speech either, because we're not anchored in this external references. The biggest battle really is the internal speech, where we remember things that have been said, or we're talking to ourselves, our own self-talk, and we take it seriously, but it's not serious. It's just like the cloud passing in the sky. I like that idea of the Mongolians, so like the big sky mind, where the mind is there and watchful, but the clouds are just passing. So the speech is passing, the anger is passing, it's just arising and passing away depending on conditions, just like the cloud is arising, present and passing away depending on conditions. So this is it's not just simply a kind of a vinaya class here in this phrase. It's not just simply talking about the monastic rules, it's talking about the kind of mind that is being cultivated and developed by the bhikkhus, and that they're making peace with the world, so that when these phenomena of blame and praise or greed and miserliness, or anger and slander of speech arise, then this person doesn't take them too seriously and doesn't get too involved in them and isn't perturbed by them. But as just mentioned beforehand, myself and Mahatero, sometimes we disagree about things, but it's a kind of a dialogue. It's a discussion between the two of us about our different perception of the world. And it's very helpful to be able to discuss with somebody else who has a different perception of the world. And one of the meanings of Vipassana is to see things manifold, to see things from a different angle. So when we do meet somebody to some degree who is blaming us or praising us, or who maybe wants something from us, where we're experiencing greed or miserliness, then it can be very useful for us to be able to listen to that and incorporate it into our mind and into our practice, and understand that these are the forces pulling us around a little bit, and we can learn from those situations. We can, if we're too still, if we're too calm, then there can be a lack of dynamic to our nature. Whereas I find these days I'm much more middle ground about things. I find it hard to really, when I meet people who have very strong positions, I'm often very curious about that position, because I can see other aspects, and I'm curious, why is it that these other aspects are not relevant in this kind of black and white world that this person is espousing? So it can be very useful to have this kind of mastery over blame and elation and greed and miserliness and anger and slanderous speech, because these phenomena are always arising in the world. We will always encounter these situations as long as we exist. So there's just the day-to-day practicality of having that skill of dealing with difficult situations. But then there's also the deeper aspect of being a person at peace in the world and not perturbed. And then there's the deeper aspect of listening to all of these difficult forces in the world and learning from them and not being stagnant. These are just a few aspects that come to my mind listening to this verse.
Here we have about 25-30 minutes. There are any comments? Welcome.
Excuse me, Mahatero. I just think this part that we're reading now brings me to the practice of mindfulness. And, you know, if we're practicing mindfulness, we're not going to be shaken by blame. If our mindfulness is, if it's developed and we're truly trying to bring that into our daily life, that's my lately I've been making an effort to do that, to bring mindfulness into daily life, particularly because of these sorts of issues of, you know, being shaken by, you know, praise or blame, seems like greed and miserliness is, to me, it's a little less distinct. That's something I think would be good to start to be aware of, how we may feel greedy or becoming caught in our, you know, craving in daily life, and to be mindful of that, bring it, let that bring us back to the present moment. So I'm finding that all these sorts of things, you know, there's anger and slanderous speech. We might not be actually saying slanderous things, but our thoughts can be going to that. To being aware of our thoughts arising, being aware of anger arising, and these are wonderful ways to come back to the present moment, to keep our practice of meditation working within our lives, because that's the most important. That's what we're doing it for, is to be free from our suffering and unsatisfactory arising in us. So I just feel this really brings to mind my practice and how to bring mindfulness into daily life. And we can all do that anywhere in any, you know, especially social situations, because that's how, when we're interacting with people, that's when these sorts of things often arise, I find. So that's a wonderful time to bring awareness and mindfulness to our experience, and to actually come back to, these things can bring us back to actual sensations of the body. You know, if anger has arisen, you can see, oh, you know, what does this feel like? You know, is this pleasurable? Is it painful? Is there some burning? Where is that located? Just feeling, experiencing, and to label it, to actually label it, and then to know how it feels in the body, can bring you back to the moment and make you mindful again. And it's much better to do that than to hold on to anger or to not identify it. Then it becomes you become caught in that and you become unmindful. So I just, this is a great stanza for practicing mindfulness in daily life.
I would like to, before going into another comment, this is Pali. Pali. Nindaya napavedeya na unnameya pasansito bhikkhu lobang sa macharyena kodang pesuniyancha panudeya mahana nindavasen nosaleniya pasasnaladve udagunavanneya macharyaha loba macharya sahita lobaha krodha ha pisunuba sarapiyanne. So it translated as bhikkhu, and this is a verb used is, the name used as bhikkhu. So therefore it appealive, it is only for the ordained bhikkhu. But the defilements named as lobha, macharya, kodha, pesunya, that is desire, miserliness, hatred, and frivolous talk or tale carrying. They are kilesas, not mistakes. You have to understand it. As Venerable Buddharakhita tried to mention, they are not in a monastic code. They are in your mind. So therefore, it is not only related to the monks. Anyone concerned about the sansare bayadaknasulu, anyone see this sansari journey is very dangerous, and anyone says, I have to get rid of that we call the bhikkhu. So for them, these things are usually not the matter, because they are under the carpet. We are doing killing, stealing, sexual misconduct, lying, slandering, all the kind of thing. So therefore these chetasikas, so mental concomitants, are usually gone unnoticed. So when you are in mindfulness, they come. Often they come. Whenever it happens, usually people get discouraged. If I am not mindful, I can have some hot drinks or having a cigarette or some kind of a pastime and forget about them. You are more towards the transgressional kind of defilements. But in meditation, you are not using this Suramereya Majjhapama Dattana. No, something used to doped or negligence, you're not. So therefore, your diligence and your alertness often met up with these defilements. When that happens, don't get discouraged. So that is what many people think, moral shame and the moral fear. That's a mistaken moral shame and the moral fear. Instead, you can talk within a discussion. This is what happens because it is related to the phrase and gain. The last week in my life was the peak of the gain and the loss. So last night in the bed, I was thinking about how can I cope up with it. With the mindfulness went up to the presidential level. They are going to declare the mindful nation like with the Vesak. Education minister himself made a statement. I made 4 videos to the Dham Pasal and the schools and to another representative for the presidential media. So it's a big achievement. But there were some other things very, very unexpected, unbecoming, lost. So I thought I will be breaking rest last night. I had a long walking meditation and went there. At the beginning, a turmoil came. And I tried my best to make myself comfortable. And I had a nice 2-hour sleep. And once got up, again the turmoil came. I thought again, usually I have that kind of a break in a night. And then again went, very nice sleep. In the morning time, I found they all settled down. They're a little calmed down. And I decided to do some action, take action. Then I told, no, best thing is to confront. Take all the people relevant and talk. And the discussion gave another dialogue for me, another stage for me, because I can express. It's a very high peak achievement and high peak lost. It is directly affecting the few weeks to come. I know after few weeks time, everything is nothing. Disappears. So therefore, these things are not belongs to bhikkhus, so-called. Not the conventional bhikkhus, this is related to anyone. But I am very lucky, I have audience. I can talk with them. Still the trouble-making people as well as the phrasing people is still very close with me. I can directly talk with. And for the last week, I myself made myself busy to take this up to the national level. And I took the turn. I rode the wave very nicely. But some people got disturbed. Unexpected level of achievement. And I found basically our media section is utterly weak. They are not up to the mark. So while riding the wave, I made the international wave telling, please help me in media. But so much of things are available. But when I am making a presentation, I am not a media person, I am an idiot on that. No one knows. They are not well organized. And very dramatically it happens when I am traveling. Often I go wrong paths. So then I have to go Google this thing. Google Akka? Google Map. And whenever I mistake, earlier they used to say, now you are in a wrong line. Now they are not telling like that. They are remapping it. Even 60 miles ahead, now you are on the way, this way it is come. So I found they are technologically so advanced, whatever the idiotness I have, even with the map, if I take a wrong junction, they take mixed up and then few minutes time they give it. So I was thinking, can I make my media section also to adoptable into the mistakes? They try to do without mistakes. You can't. Because we have so much of information. and that information is highly appreciated. But I have to, there are few weeks of presentation, but I wanted to present them in 5 minutes. So I have to pick them. I can't. It's an ocean. So too much of information, I get bogged down. I claim I am not a media man. When I go to parliament, the parliament media man came and told, Bhante, can you come and do Satyapasala here? Then I told, you are a highly wanted person. Okay, I am a private company, I can give you help. But you come and do, your mindfulness is very highly appreciated. I talk with the deputy speaker. I talk with the deputy registrar. Then I gave the printouts of the UK Parliament annual reports. Then I told, let them know. I will take these photos and send it to UK. But this communication, this media communication, or how to call information, communication, directly sending to the particular information, very difficult. That is because lack of communication, lack of relationship, lack of confrontation, avenue, just like finding a Google map. But they advance. They do it. So likewise, we have to interact with the people, we have to do silent meditation, sleep in the silent the single bed, and see how we are riding the wave. So I'm very happy because I have a dialogue team, people to talk with. So therefore, whenever I get the phrase, I get the blame. So I try not to take this as myself, I put it with the mindful school. Satyapasala as the foundation, or Nisarnavani as the foundation. So therefore, I try my best to share with you all to make it transparent, make it democratic, and make it division of labor. I think this is the best. So I hope I am advancing. Any comments?
Asrai, Bhante, and venerable monks, I don't think there is anything much to add. One thing I just want to mention is the mental concomitants that the sutta discussing is a sort of certificate for going through the body and the feeling, and these things will come to surface only when you are not bogged down in your mindfulness with the body and with the feeling. You have gone to a deeper layer of the mind to face the defilements as it is. And when those things come up, as the sutta says, you should not get affected by those things. And initially what happens is we get affected by them. And then to start that you will not get affected by them at the end, we will have to understand and we will have to accept the fact that we are affected. And with that, we will generate a mind which is not reactive to deeper layers of the mind. So in that way, the deep, deep meaning the sutta is going to give, we will be able to gradually reach possibly over time depending on our practice.
I think that reaction is the motivation we have. If there is no reaction, no motivation. So whenever we come to the equanimity, we are not motivated. We are not driven. Because driving is happening from the two ends. So we have to adopt into that. That is what you call evolution. You are consuming least amount of energy and fairly buffering and balancing. But the thing is, life becomes dull. Life is less dramatic. So therefore, in the discussion, still that less dramatic thing can be discuss in a dramatic way. That is what the Tuataka Sutta is. A very trivial thing. They are given by a Buddha to the imaginary Buddha. Simple question. Answer is very long. Very tiny thing. So therefore, in a discussion only, we can take time for these so-called trivial thing. But they are not trivial. They are very deep down. So therefore, we have to true to type. Directly talk with your direct experience, then sutta come into life. Buddharaki Dhamadu went through the operation, and how is your prasansa and labha? How is your gain and loss? I try my best to share with, but the fellow is not sharing with me.
You know, coming back to the start of this sutta, the question being posed by the synthetic Buddha is about seclusion. I ask you about seclusion and the state of peace. Having seen Nibbana, a bhikkhu doesn't cling to the world. So he's talking here in today's verse about, you know, that kind of state of mind of where you're not shaken by blame or praise. You're not blown around by greed or miserliness, by anger or in slanderous speech. And you can tackle it many ways. You can tackle it by vinaya, by, you know, sort of formal rules to some degree, or culture or etiquette or norms of society. But ultimately, it's a reflection of the state of mind of the bhikkhu or of the person. The Buddha here is answering this synthetic Buddha about what is the state of seclusion and what is the state of peace. And so last week I couldn't attend this class because I had to go for surgery actually on Tuesday itself. And I had to, you know, go to a general hospital and join in the general ward. You know, an open ward with many other patients. I think there was 18 other people in the same room, and many staff, and it's very noisy and busy. But it was not super noisy and busy because it was in the New Year period. So next week will be more busy at that place. So I was very well cared for. And I was very impressed by the quality of the hospital and the staff and the hygiene and the care. And it's really impressive, you know, how good primary care is here in Sri Lanka, and that it's actually free and available to people. And I'm quite sure if I was overseas, I would face great difficulty to obtain the kind of quality of care that I received while I was here. So I found my mind was in a very good state. It was very easy to be content and peaceful and happy. And whatever, there was many university students, so they would come and ask me about my condition so that they could learn, you know, their own. You know, there were second year medical students or second year nursing students. And so they wanted to understand my history of this illness and so that they could, you know, learn as students. So they were very pleasant people to deal with, very kind and energetic. And it gives me kind of hope. Like sometimes here in Sri Lanka, people are a bit depressed about the present situation. So when you're talking to younger people, they have a kind of a hope or an aspiration that's infectious and enthusiasm. And also, you know, when people overseas are criticizing Sri Lanka, they fail to understand the kind of quality of things here. The lived experience can be very good here. And so maybe I have done good merit in the past, but my whole experience was very good and very positive. And, you know, obviously the whole time I had the Dhamma as my companion. And I was thinking, you know, even if I was rich or wealthy, I don't think, you know, that I would benefit, that my experience could be better in other ways. I mean, if I was wealthy, they could have given me a semi-private room or a private room, and then I would be alone. You know, whereas when I was in a ward, I had people around me, and if I needed something, they just came and helped. And I can't imagine, you know, the nurses, like when I've been overseas in the hospital and stuff like that, they're so busy because there's so few of them, whereas we had quite good coverage of staff in the hospital here, and people were just generally quite friendly with each other, the patients as well as the nurses. So it was very easy. So if any of our international monks here are worried about their health, you're in a good place. I think you'll get worse treatment if you go back home. And the quality of the people was more important than anything else. So it was very nice. I must say I feel very blessed.
So we had 17th and 18th. We had the overhaul age reconsideration of the mindfulness, and we presented it to the successfully presented into the administrative 65 people, and one part and partial was for the health, and I got the administrative high ranker, and she was very happy because they have done a revolutionary change in the health sector with the mindfulness. But she was so worried. And she told Bhante, I was completely happy to present my whole thing we have given. But I am completely, utterly disturbed because government opened the doors for the doctors to go out with this present situation. So all doctors are going out. Then I told, I went to New Zealand very recently, and there's a huge demand for the nurses. And why don't you make a nurse degree rather than nurse certificate? Because they are happy to have a degree. Our people quality is very good. They are attending very good. One say, you are also supporting going them out. Then why not? Why not if you can do it? You can go. No, Bhante, when they go there, they never give any remittance to Sri Lanka. Then you forget about that. And he says, no. Earlier, there was a WHO standard. When you go there, you have to do to your country to opposite of the brain drain. And now there is no, I am so worried. Then I told, why don't you make a case? I also will come with. We'll go to the government, the policymakers, and make it a deal. Because we have facilities. I don't care whether you go to abroad or sort of, because the Asiatic people have this hospitality. I mean, that is not science. That is not medical science. But that we can make a commodity. And these countries are happy to take Sri Lankan doctors and the nurses. And they say highest demand is for the palliative care and the disabled people and the nursing. And even UK, if they are going, they accept it. So she never come, even to the presentation. We had 11 presentations. She never come. She told she has no time, she wants to do in the Zoom. I told, no harm, you can come, but never. Because they're so disturbed, medical sector section in that, lucky that you are making this statement, the people are very calm. And when you go there, that no medicine and no imports. And if you are making, you yourself ask me, someone is coming from Germany, if you need any medicine. Then I ask all the monks, there's nothing. And your case also, you went to the general hospital as a foreigner. I had my worries. Luckily, I still thank Sarath. And as Sarath is taking care, I know. And Sarath phoned me. I told you, even if these things are happening, please tell me. Please report me. So after coming, I did nothing. Because I was so busy. I was in the ups and downs in the Satipasala, but you are talking something good. But Sri Lankan cricket team hit Ireland, and it's a cricket history highest win. So I am hitting you through cricket. I am not hitting with a cricket bat.
So the Irish team flew down at the end of winter. And we're met play in the afternoon on Gaul.
Yeah.
And I asked the nurses, I said, how were the Irish team? And he said, look, they look pretty blown up by the heat.
Yeah, and dropped.
Melted.
Melted in the Gaul.
This is how Sri Lankan cricket wins.
Yeah, yeah.
They invite people from in the winter time.
We don't care.
In the winter time to come down and play cricket in maximum heat, in maximum humidity. And I said, is there not a cricket ground up in
Kandy?
No, Norelia, where there would be at least a sporting chance. But there's no sense of sport here. It's win or lose. Cricket is not cricket here. It's just win or lose. That's
good
it.
Day, that is. You
so
are
you took a bunch of white people off the plane, jet lag, seasonal adjustment, and put made them play in maximum worst conditions.
So same thing happened.
And you call this a victory, and then you're like so proud.
Yeah.
And my God.
If you go to New Zealand.
I mean, if you had even come a lower score, you would have been ashamed.
No. We went to New Zealand. It's an utter loss to Sri Lanka. Because we are the visiting team. They are the home team. But in here, I received the visiting team.
Yeah.
And soon after the completely lost in New Zealand trip, now we are winning.
Maybe I should advise the Irish cricket team the next time to, when they welcome the Sri Lankan team, to make sure they're playing it on top of a bloody mountain in a gale
and
see how you buggers do.
Yeah. That is a good thing we have to do. That is cricket. I am not talking about that. I have no idea because I don't know what the cricket is. I am telling the unlucky enough the Sri Lanka hit Ireland very badly. And yesterday I heard they have melted down and they have fallen down in the goal. This thing. I went to goal. I was there in the goal. I was doing in the outdoor walking meditation with the student and kind of there. But after 2:30, I started the Kavimadu. I asked them to sing. I just wanted to stop at 2:30. Till 3:30, elderly people, male, female, girls, boys, started singing like anything. The incumbent monk told Bhante, today you can't stop the session. Then I told next month also, 2 o'clock, we stop the session, formal, and we start singing. Are you sure? Are you coming definitely? Is the session is assured? The young girls are telling. It's full of heat. And we went to the sea. Yeah, after no, not with the girls, but it was in the beach on the Mathara, Omane, the Mukaddo Kinakinepati, and after that again I came and had a bath because heat wave is very dangerous this time.
I know, it's ridiculous, completely mental.
Yeah, so therefore it is not the Tuataka Sutta. I am telling, for the gain and the lost, you have to be equanimous. Whether you are Irish or Sri Lankan, whether you are winning or losing, you have to be, because cricket is such. So government is also running the wave of cricket. Because people are, after the New Year ceremony, they are winning cricket. So what else? Bandula, Chamara Tendikyan Udhara Pottakata. Cham. So this is the way. So now it is time up for this thing. We have managed only one stanza. And wish you all the fast recovery. And you can come back to the Kuti and walk up rather than staying in down there. So we are living. We are doing Vipassana and doing a good discussion. Thank you very much for the participation. It's a time for Vindapada.